began, Carol Hindley used to bring his name up a lot. He was the one pastor, Lutheran pastor in the Dakotas, who went to bat for the Indians, Native Indians, at Wounded Knee. And a lot of fellow pastors, you know, there was something wrong with him that he stuck his neck up for those people. We were so grateful for his impact at that time. And then when he came back here, well, I heard from him before that, not knowing him really, but I'd been selected to be on a group of retired people to go around to your churches in your area and check out, you know, if everybody's represented, the minority people and the elderly people, that they haven't been shelved and so on. So when I came to Holden, when he was here, I was so glad to get to meet him personally, and was lucky enough to share Chalet One with him and his wife. We had known his children here before, Peter especially, who was hearing impaired. And just getting to know family like that, and sufferings that they had gone through personally. They had lost two daughters before. So he went through a lot of sorrow, but was just tremendous in his hope and continued interest throughout his whole life until the very end. And he was willing to serve and work at retreats as a retired person to keep retired people active in their churches as well. And I thought they were a great couple and very privileged to get to know them.
I used to talk to Paul quite a bit in the year that he was here. And I found myself pretty fascinated with the whole Wounded Knee story. And I asked him frequently about it. And Paul's way, he was so really humble about his own courage, I think. And also so humble, I think, about what he would call his conversion to the real, to faith. He would, when he became involved with the Native Americans through, when he was director of social ministry or whatever that was for the ALC, and department directors, I think, used to have more leeway with their budgets. And the American Indian movement at that time was very small, and they wanted some money, I think, for some inner city work that they were doing at that time. And I think Paul's involvement came through, the ALC gave him a $5,000 grant, and that was a lot of money to the American Indian movement, I think, at that time. When the situation happened at Wounded Knee, Paul wasn't there. And he got a telephone call saying, you got to get here. Things are bad. I remember Kroll was saying, well, I got a phone call from Paul saying he had some church work to do. As he went out to Wounded Knee, and he said that, you know, of course, the FBI had the place surrounded, but I guess not very well, because Paul said they didn't really have a whole lot of trouble sneaking in there. And he didn't know what it was going to be when he got there, but he said it really wasn't much. That there were a few Indians, and they were going to pretty much stage the sit-in at the trading post store there, kind of take that over. That he felt up to this day that the FBI knew, had been watching that and was prepared, because as soon as it happened, the whole place was surrounded by FBI agents. He talked about how strange it was to be in this environment with your own FBI agents shooting, and being the only white person there, and thinking, what's this all about? And Paul would often say that's when he started to ask himself some real hard questions. Paul's real courage, I think, came after Wounded Knee. After it broke up, he was indicted or asked to appear before a grand jury and testify as to what, who was there and what they were doing and who was in charge and who was in control. And Paul refused to do that. He invoked his pastoral privilege and said, I was there as a pastor to these folks, and I will not testify. And for that was sentenced to prison. And that for me was and then he talked about the big service that was held for him in Sioux Falls, and how the Indians came from everywhere and helped them march to the prison in Sioux Falls. And I've been to Sioux Falls a lot of times. I wish I could have been there for that. But the kind of courage it would have taken at that point to not to say, I'm not going to speak to your grand jury. This is wrong. Paul would then often say that the leaders of the church would say, Paul, we don't mind that you're working with the Indians. We just wish you'd work with good Indians. And Paul said, and my conversion just continued. I think for me, I cherish so much Paul and I. Paul would come over in the evening in the summer and sit on the porch, and we'd have a little brandy and smoke a cigar. He would, at those times, just kind of impart wisdom and talk about life to me that I cherish so much. The last time I talked to Paul in Corolla was I think in October, and I was talking with Corolla, and I said, Corolla, Paul didn't smoke a cigar today, because Corolla hated it when Paul smoked a cigar. And Corolla says, Kent, he smoked 2 cigars today. I said, Corolla, you better put him on the phone, I better talk to him. I said, but Paul, Paul said he had 2 cigars today. He said, well, Kent, I'm watching the World Series. You know, it's serious time. You gotta smoke cigars or play baseball. Though they lived their life so richly and so abundantly and so simply, truly one of the saints.
Through that kind of courageous leadership with the Indians in northern Wisconsin, our northern Wisconsin district of the American Lutheran Church established what was called the New Beginnings in Racism Committee, and Paul was very instrumental in getting that going, which is still going all these years later. But then after he was not involved in that anymore, about 1985, our church established something called a mentor program, and Paul was chosen to be the first mentor for pastors in, I think, 3 different conferences. And his job was simply to go around and visit the pastors and sit with them and listen to them, and not really being connected with the bishop's office or anything like that. And so he was a person to be seen as a trusted friend who you could share your anxieties with or your problems, and Paul would simply listen and be a friend and share his compassion. And he visited with me a couple of times and came and sat on our porch with Corolla and my wife Sharon and I, So Paul was not only a man of courage and strong leadership, but a man of kindness and concern and compassion and gentleness that I will miss a great deal.
I was here at Holden for a week last June, just before Paul left, before Scott came to take over as director. And I remember the first time I saw him, that's the one and only experience I had here at Holden when he was here. I remember thinking what a great big bear of a man he was. Looked very gruff, stern, kind of authoritarian. And I guess I was really surprised to find out what a gentle, kind, caring person he was in the one lengthy conversation I had a chance to have with him while he was here, and then some other briefer conversations. I was really impressed with his compassion and caring for all people and all types of issues.
Zest and passion for life that I found really inspiring. And sense of perspective and balance. The story goes that he could chop wood faster than our wood splitter at age, 74? And one of the memorable moments that Carola shared with me yesterday was a couple of weeks ago that she and Paul and she and Carol Hinderly and Mary Hinderly and Fritz Norstad and Gertrude Norstad were all together at their 55th reunion, their anniversary of their 55th graduation year from St. Olaf College. And they stayed up until 4 a.m. These people who are now 55 years away from graduating and talked. And all three of these men, of course, have been directors of Holden Village. They all had a kind of humorous understanding of each other. And could kid each other in a way that I found Fritz Norstad could. For example, we all know what a strong personality Carol is, but Carol faced with Fritz and Paul had met his match. And they had a very, very interesting kind of relationship with each other. And somehow Paul lived in a kind of honesty and passion and balance and patience that I found really an inspiration.
Yeah, I was thinking of these qualities too. The humor popped out to me that somehow his sense of humor helped that balance and that perspective. He could live life passionately, but he didn't take it too seriously. He could chuckle about it. I think at times when he was talking about, you know, staff wondering if someone was too old to come, and, you know, he would be in the midst of them, and he'd just kind of chuckle because this person was much younger than Paul Lowe was, that they were considering it. He was too old to be doing something here, and, you know, he'd had those years of perspective to look at. See the seriousness on one hand and that could temper it.
I'll just share a story that goes way back. Paul was the campus pastor in Ames, Iowa, when my parents were really involved in the student ministry there and met each other. And they were on their honeymoon up in the Boundary Waters canoe area, and Paul was on a canoe trip up there too. And he liked to tell, he told me the story about three times, so I think he really liked it. About how he met my parents on a portage, having gone through, you know, all this counseling and, I mean, having worked with them in student ministry for like 4 years, and he met them on a portage and couldn't remember their names. He thought that was really funny. He didn't even remember how he knew them. And it was like a week later.
I think Paul was really interested in work areas here and what people were doing, and I guess I always appreciated that. And one of the things that we were doing when Paul came was we were putting together this boiler house project, and we had just started. In fact, all we had was a building at that point and a couple trenches. And Paul would come out almost daily as we were laying these pipes. I remember a day specifically where we were going between the boiler house and Chalet 3. We were laying copper pipes in there, and that's the only place where there are copper pipes in the entire system. We're out there sweating the joints together, and Paul asked, how are you going to test that to make sure it doesn't leak? And I remember Steve Kramer looked at him and he said, well, we aren't. And Paul says, you aren't going to test this. And I said, no, we're just going to bury it, Paul, and we'll let Jesus handle it from there. And Paul just walked away, and he was always interested in the boy. He never thought the thing would work because he didn't test anything. So when we baked him out all winter, that first winter, he lived with his doors open all winter.
We were playing poker the other night, and thinking about Paul used to come up and play all the time. It's kind of nice having the director of the village play poker with you. Nickel, dime, quarter stuff. Paul would come every time, and he'd lose the maximum every time. He liked to play, but he's really bad at it.
Couldn't remember the games either.
No, you'd have to teach him every time. You just played this 2 hands ago, Paul.
He was a great tease too, and he really loved rooming people incessantly, I guess. Working in the kitchen, one of Paul's least favorite meals was lentil loaf, believe it or not. And he used to publicly state that the only good thing about lentil loaf was that it was a great way of getting ketchup to your mouth. Every time we had lentil loaf, he'd say that. He made sure that I was at the table.
I'm sure many of us who worked with him can tell a lot of funny stories about misunderstandings that happened because of his hearing loss. And I kind of miss seeing him always put his hearing aid. He was always adjusting it. And I speak kind of softly, so he was constantly on my case about not being able to hear me. And got a lot of things mixed up a lot of different times that were pretty funny. But I just have an image of Paul being somebody who was always kind of standing with people, and he never missed the bus, and he would sharpen the knives in the kitchen, and I remember when John Tram was coming up to do a retreat, I don't think he would care if I told us, but I was asking if he'd ever met John. He says, oh yeah, but he says, I gotta tell you about the first time I ever met him. And he was real hesitant, and then he proceeded to say that he was director of Lutheran Social Services, and he had to fly out to, I think, Virginia or West Virginia, wherever John was. And he had had quite a bit to drink on the plane, kind of by accident. He says, well, the very first time I met John Tram, I think I was drunk. And he said, I just hope John doesn't ever remember that, because he said, I think I was pretty loose when I met him. But he was really humble and wasn't above doing anything. And I think even when it came time for him to leave the village after the interim, we were kind of surprised that he wasn't going to stay for the board meeting, because that would be pretty important. He says, oh, they'll just say all these kind of kind words and give me a round of applause. And he says, I've had lots of those. And so he left, and just kind of, it was kind of, I think, the real image of his whole time here. He just was very much in the background, empowering people and just standing with them. I don't think he missed a wood toss the whole time he was here.
I find these days that there isn't really too much that keeps me in the church. By church, meaning institutional church. It just seems to come down to individual people who I respect and who somehow give me, share a little bit of the passion that they have. And Paul's one of those people, I realize, that is maybe the reason I'm still in the church. So I'm really thankful.
Together made a wonderful team for the job that they had here, and one of the gifts to me was their presence to the staff. Especially, we used to sit in the front row at Vespers almost every night together in the winter, and I really appreciated that. They'd ask me how my day was or give me a hug or something like that, and that was really something that I appreciated a lot.
Interpol the last couple of weeks. I just remember him being, as a person from another country, being really concerned that I understood what was going on around here and all the different events. I just remember one particular night after on Tuesday Apple Day after the service, he came over and spent quite some time explaining who Chief Seattle was and how important he was to Paul and to the community. He just sort of epitomized for me the love and care that I've seen since being here.
Lots of images
of Paul and Phil's time here. One, I think that sticks in my mind is, can they just get up and join in the dances that we have? Just so fully present and alive at those events. Wonderful stories of ministry that he would share. Sometimes several times. But I think the thing that struck me was like the very first story that I heard was simply the way he talked about deciding to come to Holden. They got the call from the board and they have just a few days to decide. Maybe it was even a day or something. And that they really just didn't have to think about it very much. They just decided that they knew that they would come. And I think service for them was that kind of thing. There's just no question. That strong sense of calling. And I'm just real appreciative and inspired by that sense of
I've talked to Hazel and Oscar on behalf of the community, and last night they were invited to bring a blessing song in honor of Paul, and have agreed and would be willing and interested in doing that. And so perhaps I will turn to Hazel and Oscar to bring that prayer and song to us.
There's no little drum.
There's a drum here. There's a little drum.
We just didn't have a little.
Take them out.
What I would like to do, since I'm hearing about this man, and I'm going to sing the same song that I sang with the Mayan people in Mexico. It was a farewell song, and I meant to bring my hand drum, which is also, it's round. And at that time, I allowed myself to be recorded, but it is a farewell song, and I guess I'll have to use a song, and I hope I don't hear it.
It's kind of wet. It's okay.
This isn't the kind of...
No.
Oh, this will do. It will be a farewell song for the man that I'm hearing you talk about, what he had done for the Native Americans. And I'm very happy that there are people out there that come to our aid, because we do need help in the Indian world. Like I said last night, that we seem to be made to suffer. And why? Why are the Native Americans of this land to suffer? There must be a reason. So maybe during the judgment day, maybe we will know. Or maybe the answer is out there somewhere. But I'm very thankful to the people that come to our aid. I'm very thankful to John, to include the Yakimas, Well, I guess Oscar and I are the only ones that are really coming forward. So I want to thank each and every one of you for the way I'm hearing you talk about this person. He must have been a very good person just by hearing each one of you speak about him. It's always good to hear praises when a person is alive, not afterwards. I know I always like to hear that, and like I always say, I just as soon see flowers today rather than when I'm gone. So, and flowers is one of the plants that I love, and I had admired everything that you have in the dining room, and the way you have things landscaped here, and it is a beautiful area, and it's a beautiful area for people to be coming together from different parts of the country and states. And I will just sing a short farewell. There is one song that that we do have prayer songs, but I'm not one to really sing our prayer songs at all. But the only one that really comes to my mind, there's two songs that come to my mind. One I call the power song, and the other one is the farewell. So I thought I would sing the farewell to this wonderful person that I'm hearing about. And then again, I want to apologize for, I hope I don't ruin your drum.
Me too.
Servant Paul, acknowledge we humbly ask you, a sheep of your own fold, a lamb of your own flock, a sinner of your own redeeming. Receive him into the arms of your mercy, into the blessed rest of everlasting peace, and into the glorious company of the saints in light. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.